I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
And welcome to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee. Amy's out this week, but she will be back next time. And today we're joined by James Campbell. He's the Director of Innovation and Sustainability for Rocky Mountain Power, our local electric utility. We're going to talk about National Drive Electric Week and the next phase of what will be our driving experience. James, thank you for being here. And I'm kind of excited about this because I want electric vehicles so badly. But as yet, I'm not ready to afford one. But tell me a little bit about yourself and kind of what it is you do at the utility and what are we looking at going forward with National Drive Electric Week?
Sure. Well, thanks, Jason, and thanks for having me this morning. I really appreciate the opportunity to come and talk and share ideas, especially topics that I'm passionate about. Mm-hmm. And so this is a great National Drive Electric Week, which is kind of launching this weekend, goes for the whole week to really highlight the potential of electric vehicles and the transformation that's happening with electric transportation in general. And so this is pretty exciting. So as you mentioned, I'm the Director of Innovation and Sustainability, which is kind of a mouthful. But primarily what I work on is what are the new technologies that are kind of coming down the pipe and how is it going to affect both the electrical systems and the electrical grid, and then how do we integrate that into our organization, and how do we come up with appropriate policies and programs to be able to manage that? So it's really looking at next generation technology, mm-hmm. and how do we incorporate that. And so electric vehicles is one of those kind of next generation technologies that isn't so much next generation anymore. They're actually starting to come out.
There's plenty of them out there.
Yeah. So it's so we're really excited. So some of the things that I've done is, as I mentioned, we have some programs here in Utah for Rocky Mountain Power to really help put in some electric vehicle infrastructure to really bring in that base support. And we've actually been doing quite a bit in Utah. A lot of people don't realize that how much Utah has done for in this field, and a lot of it was we kind of got early in that business, so to speak, where we offered up some programs to help bring some charging infrastructure. And Utah, actually, we started about 2016 working on that. And back then in 2016, Utah had about 0.2% electric vehicles, mm-hmm. of sales. And so in about 3 or 4 years, that's jumped up to now about 3%.
Because people think of California, I would imagine, mostly for the proliferation of electric vehicles, if such a thing can be said, right?
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of that's basically policy-driven. I mean, some of it's cultural, too. They like new innovation. A lot of the technologies have been coming out of California. But it's also been driven by policies from the state. Utah's been a little unique. We've had more – it's been driven more by the private sector, not really kind of direct, you know, regulations, okay. that we don't have. And as I mentioned, Utah is about 3%, you know, sales now of new sales or EVs. We're actually among the highest for states that don't have state policies requiring or mandating or some kind of incentive.
So these
EV
are people
incentive.
Who are just wanting electric vehicles.
Yeah, it's a combination. Why Utah? The combination is because we're putting in infrastructure, Because that's one of those kind of important things. You got to be able to plug in an electric vehicle. You got to be able to refuel it. And so we've been putting in infrastructure. So that's a kind of a fundamental. And we have cheap electricity in Utah.
Fair enough.
And so those two things have kind of – and I think also the demographic of Utah where kind of a younger, high-tech, you know, that kind of demographic also kind of leans towards new technologies.
Sure, sure. So early adopters essentially.
Yeah. So that kind of makes sense too. So Utah's really – if you actually look at all the states at where EVs are coming on the roads, right, you got the coasts – the West Coast, and a lot of that, there's state policies in the East Coast as well. But as I mentioned, Utah has among the highest for a state that does not have a requirement, a direct regulation, or an incentive for EVs. The state doesn't offer a state incentive. So it's just mostly how is the market. And the two primary drivers in Utah to why is because we have infrastructure to support them. But we need more, and we have cheap electricity, so it actually can really make economic sense.
I notice electric vehicles in my neighborhood a lot. I go to my gym. I am amazed. I remember when Tesla first came out, and I just picked them only because they're unique enough vehicles that when you see them, you kind of notice what they are. And every now and then you'd see one, and now they're everywhere, or so it seems. People, they're not all new either. You know, people buy them used, and that helps them as well. But now that a lot of the U.S. automakers and foreign ones too, I would say, everybody's coming up with an EV. And so people are trying to use them as much as possible because now I would guess, as expensive as it is, it becomes one of those propositions where it's economically feasible and it's worth the extra the money if it costs a little more to buy that new vehicle if you're going to have to have a new car anyway.
Yeah. So the automakers, a lot of what's driving that is this – right, with some of the environmental implications of the internal combustion engine, both from greenhouse gas emissions, so climate change, but then also with local emissions too. So a lot of our air quality, although the wildfires this summer kind of shows can be – which is an effect of climate change as well. But the biggest contributor to our local air quality is transportation emissions. So there's a real drive globally to move off of the internal combustion engine just for – where environmental is one of those big things. And also there's a big reason why China now is the largest auto market in the world.
Sure.
And they don't have – right? Strategically, they don't have oil, so they want to get off of oil.
Right, because it behooves all of the – I mean that entire country, right?
Yeah. So they see it strategically, right? Europe is moving to our electric vehicles primarily for environmental reasons. Mm-hmm. China's moving towards both – I mean because China's also impacted by climate change as well, but also strategic reasons because to not be dependent on foreign oil and also how to break into the electric – or into the car market. The car market currently is dominated by China, Japan, and the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a way in that Chinese see this as a way in manufacturing, and they have a lot of supply of lithium as well. So they're –
because lithium is the main
component
for the batteries. That's
yeah,
right. Yes.
Yeah. And so – but so they're helping push that globally, even though a lot of the electric vehicle technology originally came from the United States initially. And if you look – at California, that's been the biggest adopter in the United States. And so they've helped it. But more recently, right, Europe has been pretty aggressive in China. And most of that's been direct the government just kind of moving forward with requirements. And so that's kind of driving a lot of that. Here in the United States, and there's a whole lot of reasons why,
right.
There's been a lot of resistance to move forward. And so it's been primarily a niche, you know, kind of subset. And also some of it was marketing, but also you had – was the performance. I think one of the things that changed –
because you can't go very far in some of the early iterations.
Especially the battery technology. Mm-hmm. There were some limitations. And you mentioned Tesla. They really kind of changed that mold of – you know, it's interesting. We did a focus group and we looked at just average folks, you know, what do they think about electric vehicles. And it was interesting at how you had some folks who were adamant, they thought like a Toyota Prius was an electric vehicle, even though it's a hybrid.
It's a hybrid, right?
And it's not. Yeah. And so they so there was these associations of a Prius as an electric vehicle. So it's slow. It's a tin can.
it's not very big.
Yeah. But one of the things that really happened, as you mentioned, Tesla, they broke that mold.
Yeah.
And what they did was they showed that actually an electric motor is by far a superior performance to an internal combustion engine.
So when we come back, I want to discuss that because I've had the chance to test drive a Tesla. And what you just said is so true. And it's I wouldn't say it's a life-changing experience, but man, oh, man, it's so much fun. I will say that. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about learning how electric vehicle technology going to change our lives. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
We are back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, Jason Lee, going solo today, joined by James Campbell, Director of Innovation and Sustainability at Rocky Mountain Power. We're talking about electric vehicles. This is coming up is going to be National Drive Electric Week. And sooner than later, we are going to have this big shift from driving internal combustion engine cars like with gasoline and using petroleum to driving electric vehicles. And I know that I'm excited about this. And you spoke in the last segment about, you know, how performance is going to change and just people's perception of that car. I had an opportunity a couple of years ago when I was a journalist to drive a Tesla. Now, I will say that like going to the dealer, they put me in the S90, which has two motors. Very unfair because when you get in it, I can't even imagine getting a one motor. I can't even do it. So I get on the freeway. I hit the gas with no sound. I am pushed back into this chair, and I'm going 60 miles an hour in just about 3 seconds. And I thought, oh my goodness, it felt exhilarating. And I thought to myself, and it was a big car, you know, this is a sedan, and it easily would seat five people. I mean, and golf clubs, you know. So I'm just wanting to get a sense from you. You know, we're moving away. At least the technology is developing fast enough that American car makers in particular are saying by 2025, they're going to have an entire fleet of vehicles you can choose from that will be electric. And right now we do see various automakers, foreign and domestic, that have at least one of those vehicles, some of them more models. And this is even beyond what hybrid vehicles is what we're used to having where there's gasoline and electric. Talk about the history of vehicle transportation and kind of where it's going.
So if you go back to the turn of the century, in like 1900, most people got around by horse and buggy.
Yeah.
And so you actually in New York City, they actually one of the things they had to deal with was like dead horses on the street.
Oh, on the street.
Excuse me. And so the city, like Public Works Department, actually would have to dispose of about 20,000 dead horses a year. So it was actually creating
one of the worst jobs in all of city.
Yeah, it was creating a public health issue, not to mention all the mess.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people whose jobs it was to go in and clean up with shovels so ladies could cross the street to not have to worry about something. So it was really, ironically, it was the environmental issues and safety of why horses were no longer – right? That's what kind of forced to go into this.
We got to come up with something else.
And so really the next technology that came out ironically was electric transportation, which was your trolley cars.
Oh, right.
And those are the first kind of form. And actually, Salt Lake City was one of the first in the world to do this. I believe Salt Lake was about the fifth city in the world to electrify. Why Salt Lake kind of went early was because we were building, we had the mines.
Yeah.
And so that kind of –
We had close electricity.
Yeah, yeah. So the mines were used – the electricity was
and
used.
And we had the widest streets in the history of wide streets too.
Yeah, and so we put in – they used that electricity then to put in these trolley cable car type of things, and that's how people moved around. Mm-hmm. And so that became a better experience. And then really after World War II, then the internal combustion engine came in.
Sure, right? Sure.
And then that – now you had personal freedom, personal – individual.
The Ford Model T.
Yeah, you were able to do that. And so that – and then when it really took off was post-World War II.
Okay.
Where now that became the – ironically, the trolley cars that are at the old trolley
station
there in Salt Lake – that actually served as many people as UTA serves today, even though the population is like, you know, a fraction of it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That was how most people in the state got around.
Right, because that was before everybody could afford their own car.
Yeah, so it was a thing. And ironically, Rocky Mountain Power's predecessor company was the one that ran the trolleys.
Okay.
Utah Power and Traction. And then eventually became Utah Power and Light, and eventually Pacific Core and Rocky Mountain Power. But it's interesting. That's our kind of our legacy. Ironically, that was a legacy of electric companies and transportation were one and the same.
Okay.
Yeah. So it kind of made sense. Then after World War II, really with the creation of Jeeps and these factories making cars, and also getting oil to be able to move these, it just we had that in place to allow for really this kind of mass consumption and distribution of vehicles across the country. Eisenhower built the
interstate highway.
Highway to allow this mobility. And so that really progressed. And to the individual, it was a really good thing. It allowed freedom. It allowed a lot of good things. Now we go – here we are now what, 50, 60 years later, and what we're seeing is it's created some kind of environmental challenges. Mm-hmm. Just like we had these – different but similar challenges.
Say, it wasn't
horses.
In the air. It was actually on the ground before.
And making light of the horse manure, but that and these dead carcasses, but that's how cholera and stuff like that would spread.
Yeah. So it was a health problem.
It was real. And so finding solutions to that, just like today, we're having real health issues with our PM2.5 and our ozone
smog,
emission.
That's right.
At local, and then also with the climate change and the effects.
Fires and stuff.
Yeah, right. We're seeing how. So we're having these real kind of impetus now to move on to a new technology. Mm-hmm. And how can we do that? And so where our technology was at the, you know, when these electric trolleys first came on to where we are today, you know, we've seen a big shift, and really the big change that's happened, and we were talking about with Tesla. I mean, Elon Musk and Tesla, you can't talk about the electric vehicle revolution without talking about them.
Right.
They really did change. Even though you had General Motors who had an electric vehicle in the 90s.
There's a great documentary about whatever happened to the electric car.
Yeah.
And what was even crazier about it, they destroyed the prototypes. It just defies any logic and just business sense, because why give up just the idea of having it in a museum, let alone be able to use the technology moving forward?
Well, the problem that the automakers have is, right, they sell a car and where they get their profit margin. And American automakers have moved to bigger vehicles because they can actually get more profit. So they want to sell you a truck or a big SUV, and that's where they make all their money. And they can get the margins are $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. But, you know, if they sell you a $70,000 Suburban SUV, you know, or a fully loaded F-150, you know, so you can get all of those, so they can build in these profits in there. To sell a passenger vehicle, the Americans have kind of given that up, and so that's where the Japanese, now the Koreans are starting to get in. The Germans can make some, that manufacturing of passenger vehicles, so they don't. So when they saw initially with the electric vehicle, they wanted their consumers, your customers, to buy these high profit margin vehicles, not these very low profit margin vehicles. So that was why they didn't want to sell these things. And so that's where Tesla's come around and said, well, this is going to be our profit margin.
Right.
And so now what they've done is they've really brought in new technologies and showed to where now they can get profit. Now in the early transition, if they've been doing that, they're getting different profit streams from environmental credits and stuff like that.
We got about a minute.
But they've been able to really transform the business through innovation to now they can get the same profits that these other ones. And the legacy automakers aren't there. So Tesla's far, far ahead of everybody else. They are not there, which is why they're pretty slow and they're kind of delaying. They don't want to give up their current vehicle mix because that's where they get their profits. And where now they can't make an EV profitable. Tesla can. And so they're fighting it. So Toyota is actually the worst in terms of fighting it. They are the slowest.
Really?
Oh yeah, they fund a lot of anti-climate change stuff.
Oh,
they're pretty bad in that sense of going against not this kind of transformation that's happened. And because they don't have the technology, they don't have the patents, they don't have all this.
Excuse me, if I'm not mistaken, Elon Musk made all of that technology. It's available. He made it so that it's free for people to use it and hopefully make it better is what his idea was. So why wouldn't Japan
jump
all over that?
I think a lot of it is how your existing manufacturing systems, how do you add on to that versus starting over?
Right.
And so which is why Tesla has an advantage is they can get rid of all this legacy stuff, this kind of wasteful and really be more efficient about it.
So when we come back, I want to talk a bit about batteries and how electric vehicles are going to look and how we're going to be able to use them. I know there's still an environmental issue with the batteries at some point because we're going to start using a lot of those. We'll continue our discussion about driving electric vehicles. It's going to be happening sooner than you might think. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, Voices of Reason, joined today by James Campbell, Director of Innovation and Sustainability with Rocky Mountain Power. And we're talking about we've gone from the history of the internal combustion engine moving into what is going to be kind of an exciting time in terms of development of electric transportation. And I know you mentioned how Tesla kind of has led out and slowly but surely a lot of the other manufacturers, of a variety in various countries, are kind of getting to the point where they're trying to add to their fleet mix. I know, as I said, by 2025, American automakers expect to have each of the cars you see on the road today in an electric vehicle. And in fact, if you try to get a Ford Mustang, this electric vehicle, I forgot the name of it, you can't buy them because the waiting list is so long. And I look and see Audi has an SUV because, of course, America, we just love our SUVs. There's so much of this technology available. How are we going to be able to power these things? I know batteries started out where you could go maybe 150 miles, not even less than that initially, but now they're getting better and better with the technology for that.
Yeah, actually, some of the original cars at the turn of the century had batteries, were electric, but the technology there, these old metal hydride batteries, they're very heavy. And didn't have the storage capacity, which is basically creates the range. So the big transformation that happened is with lithium ion technology. That a lot of that got created because of cell phones and laptops. That battery technology kind of was developed for there, and then they started for the most part putting that in vehicles. And so there's been a real big improvement in that technology, where you have and a real simple thing of a battery, you have a cathode and anode, you're positive, and the materials that are in there, and they've really perfected that to be able to store as much ions, as much basically batteries, energy that can be stored in there. That's really changed and transformed the ability where 10 years ago, a car could only travel maybe 80 to 100 miles where now, you know, cars can go 300-400 miles. It basically can go just as far as an internal combustion engine.
I want them really to get to that 400 to 500, only because then, you know, right now I could get with my car 470 miles, 480
yeah,
if you're on the freeway.
The interesting question is, do you need that?
And my answer is, I can go to Vegas without having to refill.
Yeah, so it's only time you need that is when you do long distance travel.
That's right.
So, but in your day-to-day travel, you mostly just go 30 miles, you know, round trip or so. So you really don't need – and actually most people in the world don't need that. So it's interesting from this transformation, and which batteries do you use? You can use a cheaper battery because the battery tends to be the most expensive part. Like the electric motor, those things are super efficient. They never break down.
Right.
They use energy really. I mean, think about your refrigerator. How often do you do maintenance on your
refrigerator? That's
you
right.
You know, 10, yeah. You know, you go 10, 15 years, you never, and it's just on.
It just turns on.
And it's the same thing with the car. So those electric motors and Tesla's really gotten good at the efficiency there. So the big kind of variable has always been the battery, and then how big of a battery, how dense is the battery, because and then how long of the range you want, because that just adds weight and it adds the cost. And so do you want to haul around this storage? Do you need to? And so most so I think there's a fundamental question of what is the mobility we need and how do we need to get there? So in your daily commute, you don't need a big battery. You can charge at home. And that's the other big difference too is that versus gasoline, you got to go
to a station.
To a station to get fuel, where with an electric vehicle,
driving your garage,
your destination has your fuel.
That's right.
You know, so you either at home and wherever you end up, you can charge there.
Yeah, because even in apartments and stuff, they can put them in the parking lot so that you can just plug
in. And at the workplace, you can put it in there. So it really changes that. But the technology is there to put in big range. And so you have some vehicles now that are looking at 400 miles of range to charge it to be able to go. So really you can go anywhere that you could go with a gasoline engine. And so but convenience is a kind of a consumer issue that has to, you know, that's an important, and that's kind of pushed a lot of this technology. And that's where Tesla has really, I think if you look at like why they're now the most valuable automaker in the world, is because they've proven they can because to manufacture electric vehicles are actually cheaper than other cars. It's not more expensive. Actually, simpler. You can do it instead of I think like a regular car has something like 300 parts that they have to put together. Mm-hmm. Tesla's designing that down to like 20, and eventually they want to get to like 8. And that or something.
Wow.
So that really makes it really
simplified.
Yeah, really cheap to make. So the big – there's the software as well, the value. Mm-hmm. And we can get into that in a minute. But that controls all of it. But then the battery is one of the technology that's the most – and really Tesla's – the reason why I think they're the most valuable is – well, there's two things. They have the software side as well to manage it. But then also they've announced some breakthroughs in their batteries, and they're going to start making their own batteries. Traditionally, batteries are actually made in Asia. These lithium ion because that's where the laptops, the cell phones, all that, that's where that's all been made. So the supply chain is all in Asia.
Out there, yeah.
And so what Tesla says, well, and they've looked at to develop these batteries, they just do this kind of step improvement. Well, let's take the lithium ion battery in the cell phone and let's make it bigger. There are little improvements we can do. Let's put these modules. That's kind of how we got there. Tesla came to this and said, well, let's redesign the battery. Let's make it for a vehicle and not just expanding.
Right, it was used for a different purpose, and we're trying to repurpose it for this when actually it wasn't designed to do this kind of job.
Yeah, and so they've announced a new battery, and they're going to actually start making their own batteries, which is pretty unique. Where most of the other automakers are just relying on traditional battery suppliers like LG. That's what GM is using is LG.
But again, it shows a lack of innovation on the part of American automakers. I feel like if you could, why wouldn't you want it all in-house? That means you get to keep all the money.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, right, where it became, well, how do you specialize, focus on your value added? And so what American automakers focused on was the engine and then the assembly, right? That's pretty – and then all the other parts, they just outsourced that and then they would bring it in and then they would bring it together. They didn't – Tesla's approach is a little different. They're vertically integrating everything. So they're designing and they're building every part of it. Part of it is because they were saying is they couldn't get suppliers to give it to them at the quality that they needed.
Right.
Because they were a startup, they would get the supplier's B team. They want, because the A team's going to Toyota and GM.
Because that's where the money is.
Yeah. So they didn't really care about some startup company. So they had to just redesign it themselves and put it and build up. But now they can control the costs. They can control the efficiency and bring that. But the biggest kind of component of it is the battery. And what Tesla announced, it was last year, what they announced is they've designed a battery now that hit the – there was this – I'm going to geek out a little bit. There's this price threshold, what they call it. It's always been if you can make a battery of $100 per kilowatt hour or less, that's the cutoff of it's now cheaper than an internal combustion engine.
Okay.
Historically, it's always been more, which is why – EVs cost more is because you got to buy this battery. But if you can make a battery under $100 a kilowatt hour, it's actually cheaper than an engine and
in
up
a car.
Front.
Right.
And that's not counting the ongoing operation, right? The ongoing operation is cheaper for electric vehicles because the fuel is cheaper. Electricity is cheaper than gasoline. As a comparison, it's under $1 a gallon for an electric
vehicle. We'd all jump on board for that.
Yeah. It's quite a bit cheaper.
Less than a minute.
Yeah. And then the maintenance is cheaper because you don't have to do any maintenance on this stuff. So the ongoing stuff for EVs are cheaper. The big thing is this upfront cost of the battery. And so Tesla's announced that they've been able to break this and bring it out. So in the next few years, the problem is now they got to go build the factories to make the battery. But it was once they made that announcement, that's when really their stock took off, when they went crazy.
It's a good problem to have, though.
Because
you see it's on the horizon.
Yeah, so now they're just building factories super fast to bring this out. So we'll start seeing those cheaper batteries, which means you can make bigger batteries too. That's why then they'll start doing a truck, SUVs, stuff like that. They'll be able to start making these things. And then and some of those same improvements have happened in like LG for GM and stuff like that. And so that's why you see GM and Ford is also announcing trucks as well. So really by about 2023, 2024, those will start – 24, we'll start seeing those mass produced on the roads and we'll be able to start getting those.
Again, I'm excited because I want to get one of these. When we come back, we're going to talk about our state's vision for electric vehicles and how that's going to look in the coming years. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, here today with James Campbell. He's the Director of Innovation and Sustainability for Rocky Mountain Power. And we've been talking about the development of electric vehicles, which is it's upon us. It's not even so much in the future as in the very near future, in the next couple of years and already existing. There are a variety of options for people to drive in a way that doesn't involve using an internal combustion engine. And you can, I love the idea of charging at home. Every time I think about that, it's great. And being able to do it for less than about a buck a gallon if you had to make the comparison. But National Drive Electric Week coming up. And in Utah, you mentioned how there's innovation here and trying to help develop a way so that we can adopt more electric vehicles. And I was hoping you could kind of explain that a bit.
Yeah. As I mentioned, we kind of got early in this process – started from scratch. And so as we start putting out charging infrastructure, because that's one of the main things that we really need to help people go out.
Right. Because right now you can't go to you wouldn't be able to go to you can go to a gas station anywhere. Being able to charge your electric vehicles a little more challenging.
Yeah. You can charge at home. And so we did a program in 2016, 2017, 2018, where we really tried to get a lot of chargers at workplaces so people can go from work and home and work and back. And that program's been extremely successful. We also partnered to make sure that I-15, you could go travel to Las Vegas and California, and there were chargers available, that fast chargers that you can do that. But as we're talking about now, this kind of new level of expansion, we went from 0.2% to 3%,
it's pretty significant.
Now we're looking at how do we go from 3% to 30%. That's a whole nother level of both infrastructure needs, but also how we manage that. So one of the things we're doing, Rocky Mountain Power, is we're launching a brand new electric vehicle infrastructure program. We filed that with our Public Service Commission for approval, and where we're going to deploy high extreme fast chargers throughout the whole entire state. We're going to do this at really high levels of charging, because historically we had chargers that would charge at what they call 50 kilowatts, which basically meant it would take about 40 minutes to an hour to get 100 miles. Take about an hour to get 100 miles.
So that's in addition to whatever your time is for your trip.
That was the past. Yes. Yeah. So now what we're talking about doing is putting chargers out that are three times and in some cases five times faster. So that means now you can get that 100-mile range. You can put 100 miles into your battery in 10 minutes. So which really changes. So you could, you know, if you're driving down to Las Vegas and you make a stop because you got to use the restroom mm-hmm. or go get food, you can plug in, and that whole, you know, 10 to 20 minute period, you can get a fill up just like with these high powered fast chargers. So we're going to deploy those throughout the whole state. And so this is part of a $50 million investment that the company is going to be making to really encourage this infrastructure that will enable this transformation. Because as I mentioned, the vehicles are coming. In the next few years, we're going to start seeing these trucks and SUVs, which is what American consumers like they want. And we're going to start seeing these products now coming out. Teslas, you see them everywhere, you know. But now you're going to start seeing the electric F-150. Mm-hmm. You're going to start seeing GM's going to bring back the Hummer, make an electric Hummer. They're also going to do a Silverado.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. There's new companies like Rivian, which is another startup. They've partnered with Amazon. They're going to make these Amazon delivery trucks now electric, but they also are going to sell a passenger truck and an SUV. So we're going to start seeing these vehicles come on the roads. And so what we're going to be trying to do is put a sufficient infrastructure out there to be able to handle this transformation. And so we're pretty excited about that. We just filed for approval from our Public Service Commission to be able to do that. And we've identified kind of preliminary about 20 to 25 locations throughout mm-hmm. the state where we're going to put these extreme fast chargers so you can do a super quick charge and really get anywhere throughout the state. That's the goal. We want to make it to where if you wanted to go down to Moab, no problem. You wanted to go out into the West Desert in the middle of go out to Delta, no problem. You want to go to Vernal, no problem. You want to go to Logan, no problem. You can go anywhere you want in the state and you can find at least some fast charging to be able to make it a convenient experience.
And this can be replicated, obviously, if it works well around the country. And so I was thinking, as you mentioned, like when you go home, right now we all go to using our cars, we go to gas stations. I can see in the future where if you're a restaurant, because you're in a parking lot and people sit in your place for a little while, that maybe more places like that will have these chargers. And it's an investment, and so it'll have to be these larger places, to be honest with you. But I would imagine that is part of how the future looks, if you can get more partners involved in that.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things with we're proposing this new
– or stores or
anything. This new $50 retail. Million dollar program we're calling it the EVIP, Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program. To complement that, we're working with the U.S. Department of Energy. So the U.S. Department of Energy has identified us in Utah as a key location to really deploy and look at some new technologies and how that can be integrated. Because, again, the issue of how to achieve 30% or greater adoption is a much different type of problem. So we're trying to build a more regional ecosystem of EV technology that not only looks at simple charging, but how does that get incorporated into multi-unit family or apartments? Mm-hmm. How does that get incorporated with mass transit, with electric buses and trains? How does that get incorporated with the airport? How does that get incorporated with the inland port, with trucking, with heavy-duty trucking? How do we electrify that so we don't have additional emissions there? How does that get incorporated with fleets, with this whole shift that's happened with how goods now are delivered across the country?
If you want your Amazon delivered, that's right.
Exactly. Exactly. So and then also, right, how do we get goods and how do we move people with Ubers and Lyfts and also DoorDash and Instacart, all of these things.
UPS.
It's key to electrify FedEx. All of those. And the interesting part is electric transportation fits perfectly for those. It actually fits really well if we can do it right. So we've been as I mentioned, we have a couple of projects with the Department of Energy, and we're partnering with Utah State University to develop some innovative technology to put in some kind of smart charging, to put in some utilizing artificial intelligence, these algorithms. So as these new applications start coming into our society, it doesn't overload our grid, that our grid, we can still handle it, and we can. And that's we've done a lot of preliminary analysis that shows we'll be able to handle this transition and this transformation that's happening. And the good thing is once these fleets start moving, these passenger vehicles, the cost to everybody will actually start dropping.
Right.
Because now you're sharing these kind of fixed fuel costs around lots of different people. So it actually can really be economically beneficial to a lot of different businesses as well, in addition to the individuals. So we're working on that. We're pretty excited about that with some of that technology. And you're talking about how do I see the, you know, talking about the future and the thing. I actually don't think the...
A little less than a minute.
I don't think the gas station model is really the... is the future. I think that's an outdated model for the internal. I think it's going to be different. I think how it's going to work, especially as we're looking at some of the technology with these new vehicles, electric vehicles are perfect for autonomous vehicles. The technology is very seamless in how it sits. And so I see this future where we can work where you're at work. The power grid, we know there's enough sun, you know, shining, or the wind's blowing, so we have plenty of renewable energy. We can send signals out to you as you're sitting at your desk working and on your phone that says, hey, go in and charge. Mm-hmm. And here's a charger location to go over there and go do it now. And you just send a note to your car. And
hey, your car drives over
there.
Just
car goes over and gets charged up. And if we can do that, then we can really bring these costs down for everybody as well. So I see the future being a little different than the current model, how we have it right now.
The Jetsons is on its way. Hey, real quickly, is there a way people can find out more information about this?
Yeah, yes. You can go to liveelectric.org. That's part of our partnership that we have with Utah State University, the Department of Energy, highlighting those things, and also on the Rocky Mountain Power website as well, rockymountainpower.net. You can go and find some information on that, where we talk about where we're seeing to put our chargers, some of those locations, and some of the filings as well.
Listen, thank you very much. Join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about the show, please contact us via email at voramed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. Or on Twitter at ADonSports and at JasonLee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @VORPodcast. Check out our Facebook page, and you can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or other places where you might find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason. Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on kslpodcast.com. or wherever you listen to podcasts.